You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come from you, ghetto people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope all is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good weekend. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping to, weather is accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must get done, you will get it done. You will get it done. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. On Thursdays, last night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., the Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move, with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. Tonight at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Tomorrow night at 7, from 7 to 9 tomorrow on Saturday, the Sankofa Elders Council with Dr. Janine. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Ah, yes. We're going to go right to the end. Yasasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Remember, we read Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then some other things we're going to do. It's going to be a good day, family. I'm glad you're here with us on African Perspectives, where the whole objective is to put something on your mind. Yes, that's for sure. September 26th, Afrocentrism. Let me be correct here too, dear brothers and sisters, in terms of how I deal with it. I don't say Afro, I say Afra, just like you say African. African, Afra, F-A-F-R-I. Afro is a hairdo. Afrocentrism. Afrocentrism has an ideology committed to the liberation of African people from the destructive grips of the West, involves the displacement of the European mode of thinking and being, and its replacement by concepts, attitudes, and behaviors in tune with African values and the ultimate interests of African people. Ahmad Masuma. Progress must be reconceptualized along African lines. In order to do so, though, we must recognize that moving away from Eurocentrism has merit. Simply rejecting European culture and society is progress. And the more forceful and determined the rejection, the greater advancement away from Urugu's reality. The most meaningful and beneficial measurement of our progression or regression of African people individually and collectively would be in seeing how far our thought and actions has taken us away from where enemies want to drive and corral us. The greater the distance between us and their way, the greater our progress. African-centered progress is not complicated. When conscious,
Our rejection of them is automatically an appreciation of us. Most of us do not know to interpret this deliberately rebellious movement as progress. Mainly, this is because most often, Urugu still commands the center of our interpretation of reality and vision of what can again be. Far too many warriors still measure our success or failure based on whether or not we think we are winning against them, not on whatever or not we know that we are winning against them. We forget that the African way and the European way are irreconcilably different. We forget that any African movement away from them is a progressive movement toward our empowerment. Ashe. Affirm, I am progressing. Affirm, I am progressing. September 27th, imperialism has to construct a self-importance and relevance. And so Europeans have given themselves missionary power as civilizers. Under such circumstances, Africans can only then assume the status and identity accorded to them by Europeans and have no resource of classical culture heritage from which to counter European racism. There will be no heritage or legacy with which to assert maturity and adulthood. Ife Amadune. This imposed African identity is the framework out of which most of us, or most of those online disruptors of serious productive African thought operate. After the direct preventative online measures such as jailing, targeted viruses, and mysteriously vanishing posts, comments, memes, statements, and emojis have done their frustrating work, the colored disruptors step in to further cripple whatever positive dialogue still remains. Their method of choice is to interweave nonsense, infighting, and counter-revolutionary propaganda into constructive nation-building discussions. These insistent interruptions are designed to undermine any ongoing liberating thought. They confine frontline conversations to be destabilized, imbalanced, consistently embattled state of affairs, which effectively calls the integrity of those who are actually doing the work into question. As a result, these warriors least deserving of such precaution suffer the questions and doubts of aspiring warriors who should view them as models, but instead cannot see beyond the engineered deformation and disruption. Consequently, the disruptors who are feeding off of their good names come to be mistaken as the new counter-revolutionary front line. Affirm, I assume the identity and civilized status of my ancestors. Ashe. I assume the identity and the civilized status of my ancestors. September 28th. There is no fulfillment for perverse appetites. Mama Ya Barudi. Mama Inya Barudi. By nature, Urugu society is perverse and violent. It could be nothing more than this because it has been created out of their image. And theirs is an image which is perverse and violent by nature. Now, in an effort to deceive those who remain doubtful of this, despite even their knowing the aggressions against this world, is to trying to give the appearance of correcting itself. It is attempting to present a more sane, peaceful image, but it cannot become this because it is what it is. There is nothing complicated here, family. In an effort to remake the world in its image, Urugu perverts everything. They are the big perverters. Those non-Yorugu who are consumed and subsumed by Yorugu culture and reality and are infatuated and in awe of their way and imperatives are easily swayed in Yorugu's perverted directions. Perversion is addictive to weakening minds, even seemingly articulate revolutionary ones. Perversions based interests produced perverted habits, and these habits in turn evolve into appetites, even more lethal perversions. Negativity is even expensive in a evil, unnatural reality. And Yoruguan progress dictates that there be no end to their perversions. Participating victims are not the source of the perversions. They adopt and they adapt. Even though they use their genius to magnify and normalize them among non-Yorugu. In doing so, they simply add to the culture created by Yorugu's rotten Isili core. Affirm my appetites are morally grounded. Affirm my appetites are morally African-centered, grounded. Ashe. The Inya Sisim of daily revolutionary thought. Family, where do I begin? I got so much here. I'll tell you what, I'm going to start with Russell Stamper, Judge Russell Stamper, my good brother, friend, Judge Russell Stamper from Buffalo, New York, but living in Milwaukee for many, many years. Yeah, Russ Stamper, his birthday is yesterday, I believe. Brother Kwaku gave me a shout it out, and he's 80 years old, Judge Stamper. Yeah. Good brother. And Phyllis Gordon. Phyllis used to live in Milwaukee. Now she lives in Houston. Her birthday is today. And, of course, I'm not going to give her age. You know, I'm going to do that to the sisters, you know. But right on, Phyllis. Happy birthday to both of you guys. Yeah. Let me begin with this piece right here, family, to kind of start us off. This brother was executed, Brother Marcellus Williams, and this young man did a piece on it a few days before the execution. But listen to this particular piece.
Man who's set to be executed in 4 days. Now, I have a problem. One of my followers just sent me this information, so I did hours of research, and I witnessed something that I've never seen before. The prosecutors, the people who put people in jail, came out and said, hey, he might not have done it. Can we just give him life in prison instead? They were denied. The family of the victim he supposedly came out and said, hey, don't do it. And they were ignored. But why? Well, the answer is no one knows. But the story gets a little crazier than that. See, this isn't the first time he was supposed to be executed. Back in 2015, at the last minute, the governor of Missouri, this was in Missouri, by the way, comes out and says, stop. They found new evidence. He really might not have done it. So the governor makes a special council of judges to do an investigation. They said, okay, well, he might not have done it. We're making you a report, governor. The governor says, great. But the governor resigns. A new governor comes in. Says, I don't want to see the report. You guys are all done, and he's going to be executed. So they went to the Supreme Court of Missouri, and the Supreme Court of Missouri said, nah, let's just go through with it anyway. So the prosecutors came out, and they did their own investigation, and they said, wow, he really might not have done it. The trial was a mess, and I'm going to be frank here, racist. 11 white jurors and one black juror were selected in Missouri. A black juror was rejected because his hair was kind of messy and unkempt. He didn't look trustworthy. And most importantly, the DNA on the weapon did not match his. So the prosecutors go over to his team. They said, let's talk it out. What if we just give him a plea deal, life in prison, which would give everyone time to come together and figure everything out. But in what is being called a bizarre twist, a judge rejects it. He just says, no, We're going to go through with it anyway. Now, all people are asking for is time. They're not asking he walks out. They're just asking for time. And it would be one thing if his team was asking for this to be stopped, but if prosecutors, if representatives, if people, if the victims' families are asking for a little more time, then I think it warrants that. Now, 4 days is not a long time, so where do we go from here? Well, as many people as possible needs to be aware of this, because bringing attention on an issue does a lot more than people may think. Governors, prosecutors, the Supreme Court, they all work for you. So again, in 4 days, the fate of a man is decided. So really, I just thought you should know, especially the people of Missouri, what some of your employees have decided to do to Marcellus Williams.
They killed him. Yeah. Yeah, they executed him a few days ago. Because the bottom line is, they don't care. They don't care, family. They really don't. They don't care. It's mind over matter. They don't mind doing to us what they've done to us, because to them, we don't matter. When we had these Black Lives Matter signs, no, they don't. Black lives should matter to us. But we're asking the question, Black Lives Matter. We're saying to them, we weren't saying that only Black lives matter, but our lives matter too. But not to this society. They never have it, and they never will. I've seen many more individuals whose guilt was dubious. In today of DNA and other ways to determine if somebody was there, their guilt or innocence, there should never be. And if there is an issue, it should be detained so all information can be scrutinized, everything. And if it comes up where there is something that proves that he'd done it, there it is. But here you had the prosecutors. You had the family members. Everybody saying, well, maybe, I don't know. But this governor, he was adamant. No, we're going to go ahead and, I'm not listening to nothing. I'm going to go ahead and kill him. Man. Yeah, family. Let me just say this again and again and again and again. As long as we are here, these are the things that are going to happen to us. We may think we have influence, and there might be some little bit, but we don't have. In this society, we never have and we never will have a righteous position that we can articulate to make sure that our lives are respected and protected as well as anybody else. Because there's no respect for Africans. There's no respect for African life. Got a pretty long piece I want to play. Yeah. Because I want to play this particular piece because, you know, Zaire Bolson from the Middle Nation, I don't know if you see him on your Facebook, but because of my algorithms, he's prevalent along with many others. And I'm against this system. I'm against the system. I'm against the society. It's a fraud. You know, I'm gonna play that one day. Go through that information. Yeah. Also, too, let me say this. Mama Nabantu sent me a text and email that the Collard Green Festival, because of situation that's happening, has been postponed to a date in October. To a date in the month of October. So the Collard Green Festival, which was supposed to have been tomorrow, has been postponed. So look forward to the Collard Green Festival happening on the date that they're going to have it in October. Thank you, Mama Nabantu. The Collard Green Festival. Yes, family, it's going to happen. That's right, it's going to happen. Yeah. But I want to play this because after all I've read and the many times I've read the Inyasa Sim and what Baba Baruti's narratives, what he's stating, and others, and it is family. What I want us to understand where we should be. So I'm gonna play. Let me play a little warm up right here, though. Let me play a little warm up. This sister is, she's from the African.
Knowledge and connect with the heartbeat of the African diaspora. Download our African Diaspora News Channel app now on Google Play and Apple App Store. Stay informed with authentic and diverse perspectives, breaking news, and cultural insights. Immerse yourself in a community that celebrates unity, resilience, and progress. Experience the vibrancy of the diaspora at your fingertips. Don't miss out. Empower your perspective today. Search African Diaspora News Channel and join the conversation.
So we have Dr. Howard Nichols, who's explaining why the West and China want sub-Saharan Africa to remain impoverished. Sub-Saharan Africa consists of Central, East, West, and South Africa. Take a look.
Sub-Saharan Africa has been fundamental to the global prosperity of the advanced countries. And Africa had a role to play. It has a role as a raw material producer. We will not allow sub-Saharan Africa to escape that. Okay, we do everything to keep sub-Saharan Africa where it is, also impoverished. It's absolutely vital for the prosperity of everyone else. So let's get clear about that. Okay, and this means all the economic structures, all the global institutions and the economics we teach everyone is all designed to keep Africa exactly where it is. And whether it is Europe or US or now China, it's always the same. We need Africa to be impoverished because we need those raw materials and we need them dirt cheap.
He said, we will do everything to keep Africa where it is because it is vital to the prosperity of other countries. And note that he said, we. The lecture started off with why they being the West and China. But he is saying we, which he falls in the West. And so we in Africa are saying, no, you will not keep us impoverished. What Africa needs to do is step up and tell them all to pack up and get out of the continent. We have all the natural resources. We have all the raw materials. We need to start emulating what Burkina Faso is doing by keeping everything in-house and suspending business with the West. We need to start doing that. All the countries in Africa need to start stepping up and saying no. There's far too many of these Westerners and China taking liberties on our continent. And it is time for us to get a backbone and say no. All governments come together, In the same way that more and more countries and leaders are saying no to the alphabet soup community and everything that they want us to do, we need to do the same with our continent as it relates to natural resources and all of the riches that we have to offer that, as Dr. Nichols said, other countries are getting the benefit of prosperity from our continent. So no, Dr. Nichols, you will not do everything possible to make sure we stay that way. We will not accept it. All Africans, can I get a hands up to say no? Let's fight. Let's get them out of the continent. That's what needs to happen. We don't want your business. We don't need your business. We don't need you coming onto the continent to colonize and try to take over. Bye. Get going out of the continent. The audacity and the caucasity of these people to stand up there and boldly say this too. This doctor stands up and boldly says, we are going to do everything possible, and here's why. I mean, the unmitigated gall. They need to get out. It's just that simple. Let me know what you all think about this. Drop your comments in the chat. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share the content. Also download the African Diaspora News app. You can grab it at your Google or Apple store, or head over to africandiasporanews.org and download it there. You'll have access to content like this and much more that you won't even see here on YouTube. So download that app. Also subscribe to my YouTube channel, EA Public Relations. Until next time, please be safe, everyone. Peace.
Now, the reality is, I remember hearing some very bold and statements by some others. And then once they realized they should not have made them public because they got challenged. And I remember a group of us marched on them. But then they said, well, listen, don't say it. Just go ahead and do it, you know, because this will die down. And then we'll start business as usual. We'll continue. Because the one thing that they understand is our lack of unity. Our lack of unity makes all of this happen, makes arrogant ass Dr. Nichols, who I want to punch in the face, happen. All of it. Because we lack unity. Because we can't get a cadre of brothers and sisters together and then call the nations and call the countries or those entities on the continent, wherever we have to do it, to call them to Addis Ababa, call them to wherever, Nigeria, wherever, and discuss putting down all the superficial bull and to come together as a Pan-African state, unified. It's the model of this program, Pan-Africanism or perish. If we don't deal with Pan-Africanism and control the resources, we will perish as a people. Unify or die. If we do not unify, all those other countries who are fighting, who are scrambling, the scramble for Africa's resources, will do us in. And it's not that one country who has some resources everybody wants. No, it's a shared commodity. All of it with all the other countries. Everybody has a role to play. And yes, North Africa too. Just because you're talking about sub-Saharan Africa, we got to straighten that mess out in Egypt or Kemet. Let's be real. That's one thing, family, I hope that you do. I hope that you understand. When you see something positive, that's Kemet. When you see something classical and historical, that's Kemet. But when you see something after the 30th dynasty and it's Greco-Roman, that's Egypt. Egypt is a Greek word. Kemet is what it's called. Al-Kabalon is not African. The word Africa is appropriate. It is Africa. Al-Kabalon, El, as my good brother Tejumala Olaboni told me, a lot of that begins with Arabs. So no, it's not African. We only deal with what's African in all aspects. So we're reclaiming. Look what happened when Muammar Gaddafi, and I know there are some other issues with Muammar Gaddafi, but at one time there was no better friend to Africa than Muammar Gaddafi for what he did in terms of financing and supporting, wanting to establish a currency for the continent, wanting to help unite the continent. Europeans got together, the United Snakes, they got to do him in. They got to kill him. And everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. So, I'm going to play this piece, and I've been playing a piece by Brother Shahid Bolson of Middle Nation. I don't know if you get him once again on your Facebook feeds, but you know, when you start to go these places, I guess they establish your algorithms and they send you that kind of information, you know, because that's what I gravitate to. So I want to play this particular piece. It's long. It's long. But this is African liberation. Once again, it's the same situation. Africa's liberation. I don't give a damn what happens to any and everybody else outside of us. But if Africa unites, other countries will go. I don't give a damn. And I'm going to say this. When Africa unites, if you come to us sincerely and justly, because we are humane people, and you're willing to pay fair market value for the things that we have and the things that we will produce, the things that we will produce. Africa must never be able to produce anything. They must keep it poor. We want their minerals. We, you know. And when we produce something, we want to sell it back to them. We're going to take your raw materials, produce it, and then sell it back to you. You know, it's a damn shame when you go to Africa. I haven't been all
over. This call may be recorded or transcribed.
I haven't been all over Africa, but I've been to enough places. You know, and here you see brothers and sisters on the streets selling with, you know, all the goods on their head, you know, stuff that was taken out of Africa, raw materials produced in the West, particularly into Europe, and are being sold. The Chinese are serious in Africa. The China Mall. Yeah. So I'm going to play this particular piece by Bolson. It's African liberation would collapse the West, and I don't give a damn. I hope it does. But we need to be unified. We need to be independent. self-determining, liberated, and sovereign. Sovereignty is what we seek, dear brothers and sisters.
You know, there was a book, George Friedman, the geopolitical analyst, he wrote a book in the early 2000s called The Next 100 Years, where he tried to sort of forecast what the world might look like in the year 2100. He began by talking about what the world looked like in the year 1900, and then he goes sort of decade by decade, how radically everything changed between, say, 1900 and 1930, or 1930 to 1950, and so on. And it's truly astonishing how many drastic paradigm shifts took place. Empires fell, empires rose, world wars, on and on. Really breathtaking global shifts. When you look at history that way, it's hard to wrap your head around how many changes can actually take place in a relatively short amount of time. Basically, within one person's lifetime, everything can change. You know, in 1900, like he says in his book, London was the center of the world. There was no communism, no Soviet Union. There was the Ottoman Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and so on. The Americans mostly stayed on their side of the Atlantic. And it seemed like this is how things would just be, you know, indefinitely. But just a short 40 years or so later, everything changed. England was demolished in the World War. The Ottomans were gone. The Soviets emerged. Germany took over France, on and on. Really radical, unthinkable changes. Then if you go ahead a few more decades to the 1980s, again, it seems like a completely different world. And then on forward to the 2000s, it's remarkable. Everything changed. And when you think about that, when you think about how many huge paradigmatic pendulum swings there have been that have taken place and that do take place in just a matter of decades, it makes certain continuities even more astonishing. When you're able to maintain a constant amidst the radical changes that sweep over every other element of international relations, global power relationships, international relations, and so on, when you're able to actually keep something unchanged, it lets you know just how important, how paramount it is that this particular status quo remains intact, how important it is to those who are keeping it intact. And I'm talking now about the West's relationship with Africa. Because the West's economic relationship with Africa has not fundamentally changed in over 800 years. This is absolutely stunning. If the drastic and rapid changes that can occur and have occurred within the West over just one or two decades, if that's breathtaking, well, what about the fact that nothing has changed between the West and Africa in basically a millennium? I mean, the relationship was ruthlessly extractive 800 years ago. And it's ruthlessly extractive now. And you can't help but recognize that keeping things this way simply must not only be important to the West, but literally it must be the most important thing to the West. It's so important to them that they have always maintained this status quo, no matter what else changes in the world. Wallahi, they're dedicated to the subjugation and the exploitation of Africa more than they're dedicated to anything else. Everything else is allowed to change except for this. This must never change. And it's not difficult to see why. I mean, it's the subjugation and the exploitation of Africa that has enabled the West to impersonate a superior civilization. It's like a con man, you know, a drifter who tries to convince people that he's some sort of an aristocrat or a monarch or something. Well, he needs to have some kind of a display of a monarch's wealth in order to be convincing. And that's been the whole basis for what the West claims about itself being superior. The whole basis has always been that they're materially successful. So, okay, today you have iPhones and technology, you have a high standard of living and so forth. So that means that you must be better. You must be more intelligent. You must be more evolved. You must be more civilized, more advanced than the rest of us. I mean, look how nice their places are. See how much better their stuff is. Well, this is all reliant upon the vicious pillage and plunder of Africa. Without this subjugation, without this exploitation of Africa, Europe and the West would be nothing but crude, emaciated serfs, barely producing enough to survive. Their wealth was primarily derived from theft and plunder, from piracy and slavery, from mass murder and crime. This is just a historical reality. Because of the subjugation of Africa, first through chattel slavery, the extraction of Africa's human resources, and now through the extraction of natural resources, The West has been able to maintain this artificial, unearned status as a so-called civilization, keeping Africa subject, subordinate, suppressed, and impoverished is an existential need for the West. It's the only way that they can keep up the pretense of their supremacy. Because again, the pretense of their supremacy has never been based upon any actual advancement, any actual sophistication, any actual moral or intellectual development. It has always been based on the violent accumulation of wealth and resources, upon brute power, deceit, and conniving. And Africa, the subjugation of Africa, is the most vital necessity for keeping this con going. I mean, right now, the trade relationship between the West and Africa is that something like 70% of exports to Africa from the West are manufactured goods, and imports from Africa are just the raw materials used to make those manufactured goods. So they're taking from Africa what is needed in order to produce goods that then Africa buys from the West, made with their own raw materials. And the West has done everything possible to try to impede Africa's ability to build its own manufacturing base so that they could potentially use their own raw materials, use their own raw minerals to produce their own goods. I mean, the whole process should be done in-house. It should all be done in Africa. That's what makes sense. You know, you have the materials, you have the minerals, you can make the products. That's how it should be. Rather than giving your raw natural resources to the West for them to manufacture and refine and process and so on, Africa could do all of those things themselves. I mean, imagine the impact that would have. Where would that leave the West then? Well, they know that. The West knows that. They're acutely aware of their actual total dependence upon Africa. If Africa manufactured, if they use their own resources, their own minerals, their own materials for their own industries, well, the entire economy of the West would collapse. And with the collapse of their economy, their whole so-called civilization would collapse. Africa is the foundation upon which they built their house. So they know this. And like I said, this is why no matter what else changes in the world, no matter how power dynamics shift in the world, the subjugation of Africa has been maintained for over 800 years. There's literally nothing more important to them than this. And this is why there are very powerful factions in the West that want to destroy BRICS, and why they fearmonger about Chinese investment in Africa, and why America specifically is engaged in nonstop interference, covert operations, regime change, regime infiltration projects all across the continent. I mean, look at South Africa, the ANC, either out of naivete or corruption, or naivete that devolved into corruption, or out of coercion, or some combination of all of these factors, the ANC collaborated with neoliberal programs for 30 years. I mean, to one degree or another, for the last 30 years. But as global power dynamics have been shifting, and the creation and the ascendancy of BRICS has been taking place, people have started to have aspirations. And more importantly, they've started to have options. And those options have made their aspirations actually achievable. I'm talking about aspirations of political independence, aspirations of economic sovereignty, aspirations of getting out from under the yoke of the West. That's actually becoming achievable now. So the ANC was facing, and they are facing, severe criticism and opposition. They were being challenged, and they were being challenged by parties that do not accept neoliberalism, neoliberal colonialism, corporate colonization. And the U.S. knew that eventually they were going to lose power. Eventually the ANC was going to face the consequences of capitulation and collaboration, and they were going to be removed and replaced. And if the U.S. didn't do something, then the replacement for the ANC was not going to be an obedient client. Because again, South Africa has the option now not to be an obedient client of the West. I mean, as long as there were no options, then it wasn't that risky for America. Even if the ANC lost popularity, no matter who replaced them, they would have no choice but to capitulate to neoliberalism because there was no options. But there are options now. So you have the United States then backing the so-called Democratic Alliance, the DA, which is an overtly neoliberal, Western-aligned, elitist political party of colonizer collaborators. So the unpopularity and the opposition to the ANC opened a space for the DA to move into the government in the last election. So now you have this so-called GNU, the Government of National Unity, which is nothing but a neoliberalism light and a neoliberalism hardcore. It's a coalition of one party that was aligned with the West, the ANC, aligned with the West out of coercion or naivete or corruption, but which could have potentially been influenced by anti-neoliberal populist sentiment if given a chance. Now, they've joined together with a party that is intensely committed to colonization, intensely committed to neoliberalism. I mean, they want to privatize everything. They want everything to be sold off to the private sector. They want to hollow out the government completely. And you need this radical neoliberal colonizer faction to be there, because as the new options have emerged, you've now had radical anti-neoliberal positions being advocated and becoming viable. I mean, you're actually having calls for the nationalization of industries rather than the privatization of state enterprises. Well, the West can't have that. So they need something like the DA, the Democratic Alliance, to move in to try to avert the threat of South Africa actually becoming politically independent and economically sovereign. You know, they call it the GNU, but the N shouldn't stand for national. It's the government of neoliberal unity. It's a coalition united against the people of South Africa, in my opinion, in service to the interests of the elite private sector of South Africa and to the global Western private sector. The DA is a racist, Zionist, anti-BRICS, pro-Western colonizer political party, funded at least in part by the National Endowment for Democracy in the United States, which is nothing but a wing of the CIA, whose sole mission is to advance American interests. So in South Africa, this was a regime infiltration project that was undertaken to actually avert regime change in South Africa. Organic regime change. Because look, you can nationalize the mining sector in South Africa. You can. You can nationalize the banking sector. You can nationalize the Reserve Bank. You can do all of these things, and everyone knows it. It's not some kind of a mystery that these types of measures would be immensely empowering for South Africa. These aren't measures that we don't know whether they're useful and beneficial or not. Obviously they are, and tremendously so. And that's precisely why these types of policies, these types of measures have to be subverted. I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous for anyone in South Africa today to advocate neoliberal policies when we have in front of our eyes the catastrophic failure of those policies. I mean, nearly half the population is unemployed, over half the population among the youth. 75% of South Africans earn just the equivalent of $350 a month or less. In fact, roughly half of the population earn only $75 a month. And you're still going to advocate for the policies that got you here? No, obviously, if you nationalize, it's better for you, obviously. I mean, empower the government with those abundant resources instead of letting foreign companies seize those profits and transfer them out of the country. I mean, if those revenues are going to the state, then the government will have the resources they need to better address the needs of the society. They can invest in SMEs, they can provide education, skills training, and so on, fund R&D. I mean, it's a no-brainer, but you're scared of what the West will do. They tell you that if you nationalize, then there will be massive capital flight, investors will run away, and so on. Well, think about that for a second. They're trying to scare you with consequences that they themselves will be imposing. They're warning you that if you do something that is in your country's best interest, they will punish you. This is very different from telling you that the policy in and of itself is actually bad. They're telling you that they will make it a bad policy because of what they will do to you if you implement it. You understand? These people are threatening you, and then you're supposed to trust their advice? The advice of these neoliberal predators? You're supposed to listen to them and trust their advice when they are blatantly telling you that they will punish you if you do something to try to make things better, to try to change things? I mean, they couldn't make it more obvious, their malice. They couldn't make their malice more obvious. They couldn't make it any more obvious how against your best interests they are, how much they put their own private interests above the interests of their country. They're openly identifying themselves to you as your enemy. Do you understand me? I mean, they're not saying that nationalization doesn't work. They're not saying that it isn't beneficial. They're saying that they will do everything in their power to make sure it doesn't work. They're saying that they will sabotage nationalization for their own sake, for the sake of their own profit interests. And still you let this type of people have a say In policy discourse? Well, that's humiliating. They hold you in contempt, and they don't even hide it. I'm telling you, everyone knows what should be done in a country like South Africa, what kind of economic policies they should implement. And it's the same thing that many global South countries should do. Everyone knows the obvious economic benefits of these types of policies. And everyone knows that the only reason that you don't implement these policies is because parasitic, predatory, Western colonizing private sector powers will try to punish you if you do. I mean, for instance, the nationalization of key sectors in South Africa or in any other country, such as mining, such as energy and finance, this is essential to try to break the stranglehold of foreign capital on your country and to ensure that the country's resources are actually used for the benefit of the people and for the benefit of the domestic economy. Land reform, the question of land reform in South Africa is critical. This is a critical issue. There should be a comprehensive land reform program in South Africa that prioritizes the redistribution of land to the historically disadvantaged. This is basic, and it's incredibly obvious. And once you've boosted the state's resources through nationalization, there should be a comprehensive social welfare system that provides for the basic needs of all citizens, including health care, education, and housing. This is, again, obvious. And finally, the government, of course, needs to pursue a policy of industrialization and job creation, a policy that prioritizes the development of the domestic economy. And like I said before, prioritizes the manufacturing of goods from their own raw materials, from their own raw minerals and their resources, rather than the export of those minerals to Western companies for them to use in their manufacturing. Honestly, none of this requires any particular brilliance to understand. These aren't radical policies, but they're only made to seem radical, and they're treated as radical because everyone is living in fear of private sector tyrants who completely control the discourse. So you're not allowed to talk about anything that isn't basically a policy genuflection to shareholders and to Western supremacy. But everyone knows that these are good policies that would help South Africa. And that the only reason anyone would think that they might not be good for South Africa is because they know that doing a policy that's good for South Africa would prompt a hostile, retaliatory response from the West. Well, like I said, that should show you what kind of a friend the West is. But look, South Africa, and all the countries in Africa, all the countries in the global South, in fact, they're in a position today to actually dictate the terms now. If Westerners want to pull out their capital, so say you nationalize, okay, if Westerners want to pull out their capital, they want to withdraw their investments, okay, go ahead. Dig around in your own lands for the minerals you need to make your stuff, and good luck to you. I mean, we have other investors anyway who can take your place. There's other companies that we can partner with. You're not the only ones. So the only question really is, how much are you interested in boosting the economies of China, the economy of Russia, the economy of the Gulf? How much do you want to see the BRICS countries surpass you economically? You know, BRICS already accounts for more of global GDP than the G7. So if you want to pull out your investments, you pull them out. Go ahead. You can only harm yourselves. No. South Africa and the Muslim world and all the global South countries, it's time for them to break away from this paradigm, break away from Western domination, and start implementing all of those policies that they know perfectly well will benefit them, whether America likes it or not. I mean, can you imagine if the Gulf countries didn't put their oil sector under government control? Where would they be now? But look at where they are now. Look at the amount of capital they have now. Why, South Africa could have and should have a comparably massive sovereign wealth fund. There's no reason for them not to. No, this millennium-long system of subjugation needs to come to an end. And it really doesn't matter if the road to liberation is a little bit rocky. I'd rather be traversing a rocky road than be buried under the rubble, which is where the West has kept Africa for centuries. This is the richest and most important continent on the planet. And the West stole your riches, and they stole your importance, and they've been an imposter on the throne for far too long. It doesn't make any sense to be afraid of someone whose power is actually dependent upon you. That's a psychological power, not an actual power. They have a psychological power over you. Every element of their real power is completely derived from you yourselves. It's like your hand is on the tap that the hose is attached to that they use to waterboard you. And all you have to do is turn it off.
Turn it off. That's right, family. Turn it off. We'll discuss this and other things when we come back from the break. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. On a Friday, yeah, I'm going to play a couple of soundtracks, a couple of my favorites, something. Hope you like them too. Car Wash, Rolls Royce, fun movie, great soundtrack. Claudine, Gladys Knight and the Pitts. So we'll play those for you. Hope you enjoy them. And when we come back, we'll get off into the discussion. Hope you enjoy them, family.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
She's coming.
Work and work.
My fingers to the bone.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Yeah. Soundtracks. Good Friday music. I always had a thing about music on Friday, you know, even when I was a little kid and knowing that Friday was the last day of school, but even too when I was working, especially when I was working in that foundry, man, love Friday, especially when I got off early,
Yeah. Yes.
I hope you enjoyed the information, not necessarily enjoyed, but I hope you were informed by what Brother Bolson was saying. Because as he was talking about South Africa, he's basically talking about the continent itself. I am adamant about us not wasting any time, but still we do. We still believe that voting, you know, it's going to change something. I think we all know by now, and we realize that, yeah, we'd rather have Kamala Harris in office than Donald Trump. There's no doubt about that. And the number of us, particularly American African men, who are not going to vote for her because she's a woman and who are going to vote. I mean, to me, then just don't vote. I never voted for a Caucasian in my life, especially for the presidency. I'm trying to remember even if I voted for some in the union. In the union. I know I voted for some brothers. But that's just me, family. I'm not saying you do what I say do, but there's one thing that I'm adamant about, that you look at and think about some of the things that I say. And it's not me, because once again, this is not my opinion. I don't give you my opinion. My opinion is deeply profane based upon my understanding of our history and what has happened to us by these people. It is very profane. I can give less than a rat's ass. But what I want to give to you is information and knowledge of our scholars, our historians, our ancestors, our elders, deep wisdom. I want to present these men and women to you so that you can read them, listen to them, understand them, and have others do the same. The time is now. Africa must unite now. We must begin to put that into play now. We must work on that now. Now played along with this, and of course, some of us who have been so deeply indoctrinated, who have been so, oh man, this is sickening. But let them go. The ones of us who have an understanding that we are African, who have an understanding that we should be able to determine for ourselves what is our destiny, what is our direction, what roads we must take. Those are the brothers and sisters that we must work with. Those are the brothers and sisters on the continent and throughout the diaspora. We're calling all of them home. Because when we look at it, everywhere around the world, we are disrespected. We must put the Chinese in check, because Africans in China are consistently disrespected. I've seen video. Even Chinese aren't coming on the continent disrespecting us. Africans. I mean, you know, when it comes to battle, we kick ass. A But sometimes we don't do it for ourselves. We've been trained to do it for others. In fact, I don't know how true this is, but I remember way back in the 70s and so forth, you know, talking about liberation and, you know, and fighting and so forth. I said, yeah, Hitler said, give me a regime of niggas and I'll rule the world. You know, I doubt if that's a real quote, but the point being is that if you give me a trained group of us in all the modes of battle, we win. Check this out, family. And I don't know if this was some AI stuff or whatever. I saw some Chinese have developed a sheet that makes you invisible. Yeah. I don't know if you saw that. Yeah. You put the sheet over you and then bam, you're invisible. Yeah, that's a game changer. So if you want to go in and assassinate somebody, make yourself invisible, you get past all the security. I would love to do that, make myself invisible, and go in Trump's room and just beat the shit out of him. I mean, just pound that son of a... his fat, stanking ass. Good afternoon, caller.
Hey, Oshie, why would you want to do something like that to someone that's going to make America great?
Great for who?
The great dingo. Yeah. It's just amazing how anybody in their right sane mind could vote for this con man. Yeah, I mean, it is.
I agree with you.
It is absolutely, it's right. Amazing. Yeah. It's like logically, how effing stupid are you? I mean, if you just take this whole thing about tariffs, and here it is, this man is preaching tariffs, but this dumb son of a bitch can't even explain tariffs and how it works.
Right.
And you got people eating it up and placing it in a situation to where as if you elect this fool and this fool implements those tariffs, you think there was inflation now.
Oh, man, it's going
to be
serious. There's
going to really be inflation. Yeah. And on top of that, then what's going to be your effing excuse? Then who you going to blame? Then what are you going to say? I mean, it's just asinine how stupid the majority of these people of color are in regards to dealing with them. Now, the white folks, I understand clearly why they're doing what they're doing, mm-hmm. because they don't want people of color to have anything.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want any type of person that's not so-called European to have anything in this country. And the sad thing is, this son of a bitch ain't offering you nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you talk about taxes, look, I'm in the tax bracket where the bottom line is, yeah, I got a little bit of benefits, but it don't overweigh the cost. I mean, if the truth be told, an extra $1,000 or $2,000 don't really mean as much when you're going to have to pay out $4,000 or $5,000 on the other end. I mean, it's just absolutely logically stupid for anybody to vote for this character. I mean, the bottom line is the 1%, they always going to benefit because that's the way the society is structured. But here it is, you have Harris talking about increasing the taxes on people who make over $400,000. Now, I just ask this question. What percentage of the American people making over $400,000? What percentage of the Negro is making over $400,000?
What percentage of us is making over $400,000?
Very small. I can't give you the exact. It's single digits.
If it's 5%,
it's single digits.
You'll be shocked.
Right.
Now,
exactly.
It's different if you're talking about accumulation of having assets worth over $400,000, but she's not talking about taxing you in that manner. She's talking about taxing you if you earn that a year. I personally only know around three people that make that kind of money. Mm-hmm. And one of them is an athlete, and the other two are business owners. And the thing is, you got a situation where Harris is talking about giving you $50,000 a year tax credits to build a business. Now, do you imagine what it would be like if you're a baker and you decided you wanted to open up a bakery or something of that nature with a $50,000 a year credit? He's not talking about doing anything like that. You know what I mean? There's just so many other things in play that if you had any effing common sense, you wouldn't vote for this clown.
No.
There's nothing that he's offering. And this is the real crazy thing. All of these Negroes, and I've heard Latinos and everything, have the nerve to talk about immigration, the borders, and all of that. Do people really understand what these clowns are talking about? Do people really understand that this guy is talking about rounding people up who are even supposedly American citizens and deporting their dumb asses? Yeah. And you think that because you think you are an American citizen or you came here legally and you got some sort of papers that your dumb ass ain't going to be rounded up and put in the quagmire box to where as you may get back, sent back to your home country who don't want your ass, who you don't even know what's going on in the country at this time, where there is no place for you in that country, but you talking about placing it in this country to where as your fruits and vegetables may not get picked, because white folks ain't going to do it, and damn sure black folks ain't going to do it, so then who's going to do it? Oh, and then they're talking about undercoverly changing the child work laws and things like that. Man, listen.
What do you mean? The child labor. Jay. What do you mean? The child labor law? What they want to make? They want to be able for children to work like they did.
Decades ago. Yes. That certain states, I think, have already changed the child labor laws. Oh, no question. I mean, it's just a situation, Oshi, to whereas if you don't understand logical things and people trying to tell you something and you're not listening because you under the idea that it's gonna hurt someone else within the process is really gonna do nothing but hurt you. I mean, the dumbass that told you this. This is the thing that gets me in. And nobody really addresses it. Here it is in Florida and other states, convicted felons can't vote. But here it is, they say they gonna let this son of a bitch vote because he was convicted in another state. Have you ever heard such asinine poppycock? I mean, it's really amazing that if people had analytical, critical, and logical thinking, that all they would have to sit down and look at what is in front of them and say, this ain't the person to vote for because he's not really offering you anything. Mm-hmm. Tell me logically, what is he offering you to make your life as a person of color better? Mm-hmm. And even a person with a little bit of money, he's not really doing nothing to make your life better because it's going to cost you on the back end. Mm-hmm. thing he's talking about, Oaks, is going to cost you in the back end. It's just, hey, if it happens, it just happens. Well, that's the way I see it.
Well, one of the things here, you know, this is the land of the illusion, the land of the dream, you know. And for many of us as African people who have come here to try to realize that dream, or have been here, who have been here for centuries, recognize it not as a dream, but a nightmare, a deep struggle. Just like I mentioned about Marcellus Williams and the situation that he was confronted with, and the fact, because he's not the first, there's been many other men and women who claimed innocence and had people work for them. I mean, just like the Innocence Project. The Innocence Project has freed, I don't know, let me get the exact amount, but I bet you any money, the Innocence Project has freed hundreds of people. Hundreds. You know? Because why? This so-called criminal justice system is criminal.
Corrupt.
And very much so. But like everything else, and especially as it relates to us. Just like the brother said, you know, Queen Liberty, you know, with the scales and so forth, got the blindfold on, but her ass peeks. She want to see, who is this is seeking justice from me? Oh, it's your ass. Okay, not, you know. She peeks. And just like everything else in the society, it's all about money, the best that money can buy. That's why many people were against capital punishment, because if you had capital, you won't get capital punishment. You can do some of the heinous things, just like Trump said. I can shoot somebody, I'll get acquitted, and you'll still vote for me. That's how weak these son of a bitches are in their loyalty to him. It's ridiculous.
I don't even understand, in all honesty, why they have loyalty for him when he has no loyalty for them.
No
he
doubt.
No,
he's shown it.
They're just, in his mind, deemed as suckers.
Yes.
I mean, if you ever hear some of the things that these Neanderthal knuckle dragon Yorugal be saying, man, it would absolutely blow your mind. And then when you try to tell them the truth, they can't even grasp it, don't want to accept it. They just caught up in this whole cultism. And it's mad. It's like Trump is Jim Jones, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Trump
yeah.
is really like a modern day Jim Jones, who really has nothing to offer the American people, and the American white, well, I say the American white people are just mm-hmm. too stupid to even believe in it. But that brother that they just murdered the other day, I gotta give him a lot of credit, man. He left out here with a lot of peace.
Yeah.
He left out here understanding the system and how the system works to take his life, man. And I have to give him much credit, because I guess that's right there shows what spirituality is, and understanding,
right. I agree,
and being in tune with your creator, because the things that he said definitely made it clear that, you know, it's Allah will, mm-hmm. and Allah will protect me mm-hmm. in this. And what's so sad about all of it is, Oshi, that they didn't have to kill him.
No.
They just wanted
no, they
to
didn't.
Kill him to
yeah.
to prove what
right.
point. What is the point of killing somebody when the evidence wasn't 100%? I mean, you know, it's crazy. And you call yourself a humane society. You know what I mean? I mean, the only thing worse in this world of me right now is what's going on over in Gaza.
Yes.
I mean, this This Netanyahu is probably one of the most wickedest, evilest individuals. But the good thing is, from what I had saw, a couple of people walked out of the General Assembly after listening to his lies and rhetoric. But the most crazy thing out of all of this is to listen to this bubbling idiot talk about he could end the Ukraine,
he could do everything,
and rush the war in one day. As dumb as that son of a bitch is, he can, come on, man. All he's doing is manipulating stupid individual. And you know something, OC? I'll leave it like this. It becomes a sad state of affairs when you have people, when dealing on the continent, trying to make it seem that America, who enslaved your stupid ass, is better for you than countries who have never enslaved you. Mm-hmm. That don't even make logical sense to me. How anybody could say America is better for the continent of Africa over China and Russia. I don't care if they're supposedly communist countries or not. Did they ever enslave you?
No.
Did they exploit your continent on the level to which America has?
No.
China and Russia go in there trying to do business. Now, are the terms of the business as great as they should be?
Probably not.
That's African people, because they're not trying to negotiate from a strength position. They're negotiating on a survival position when it shouldn't be negotiated that way. But what America has done, come on, man. You know, it's like I asked this guy who was back in America against Libya and Gaddafi. I just asked him one simple question. Have you ever read the Green Book? And when you say I haven't read the Green Book, there's no discussion between you and me. Because regardless of whatever Gaddafi did, Gaddafi was trying to do more for the African continent and African people than the European ever has. So, I mean, come on, let's really keep it real, bro.
Well, that's why they killed him.
Just don't understand certain things. Yeah. And the sad thing is, if black people ever realize that these white folks don't got no love for you, they ain't never going to really be your ally. They're only using you for their own gain, and that they ain't no friend of yours and never will be.
Right. And see, I don't understand why we don't comprehend. Well, I do understand, because the Caucasian is very manipulative. He has a lot of illusions. He has a lot of perceptions that you think, oh, well, they're going to change this time. They ain't going to be like the last times. Because, you know, we're naive, you know, because we want it to be that way.
I tell you this much. There are forces within the continent that have woken up, are waking up, and are trying to change the dynamics of the narrative.
Sure.
And the question becomes, as the narrative change, are we going to get on board and understand that we could play a role in building up the continent and doing the right thing? Listen, this country here, I don't care what you think and what you feel, it's fallen. Now, a lot is going to survive. You understand what I'm saying? But on the whole, it's fallen, bro.
Yeah.
This thing is going to fall, and it's going to fall even more if this retarded dumbass gets back in the office. And Lord, let me say this. This is the thing that you really got to watch out for. If he gets control of the Congress and the Senate, It's a wrap for black people. It's a wrap for black people, people of color, and other ethnic groups. Because all of the things that y'all Negroes felt that y'all gained from the civil rights movement up to the day, every so-called bill and everything else that was put in place to assist us, I guarantee you it's going to be wiped out. I guarantee you. The way that he's going to decimate this country for people other than white, these Negroes don't even have the comprehension to understand what's going to come into play in this country if he gains control of the Senate and the Congress. And the thing is, you know, it's so crazy. Oh, and this is the truth of the matter. He's too much of a dumbass to know what he's doing. But those people that are in place now,
right,
to manipulate him,
yes,
that couldn't do, yes, their thing in his first term,
exactly,
because you had certain safety nets then, they're not there now for the safety net. So every type of nonsense that they thinking about implementing in this country,
they can do
it's
it.
It's going to be implemented if he have control,
right,
of both houses.
Because he'll have the judicial branch. He'll have control of the Supreme Court.
But what are you talking about?
Hold on. He is the executive branch. He'll have control of the legislative branch, both houses of Congress. So whatever 20, 25 states, whatever crazy ass shit you want to do, it can be done. Go ahead.
And you know what the people think that the safeguard is? The one thing that they no longer have, the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is going to be the one that does the dirty work.
Right.
And Negroes don't understand that. What did they do with Roe versus Wade?
Yeah.
What did they do with supposed affirmative action? What did they do with all of the things being challenged that got to the court? Didn't they overrule it? Didn't they turn it down? Didn't they do the necessary things to get rid of it?
Jay, what did they do with allowing the president to have certain powers, you know, to veto?
So you're saying now sick white man, a dirtbag, a loser, a con artist, now has control of all of the branches in this country, and you think that people of color get any type of wins? What do you think they're going to say when they get challenged? Think about this. When they get challenged on the implementation of sending people back to their country, what do you think they're going to say when they go to the courts?
Yeah. See ya.
Do you think they gonna rule with the people? No, man.
No.
But we don't understand it. Regardless of if Kamala Harris is the biggest dumbass woman in this world, she can't be worse than Trump.
Yep.
She can't be. Ain't no way in hell she could be worse as Trump. What has this man honestly in the 10 years that he's been in this public sphere given to the American people, everyday American people? What has he given you?
Let me tell you, the truth is that
ain't even beneficial to you if you really, really sit down and understand numbers. It ain't beneficial. I think with my income, I just maybe benefited maybe $4,000 or $5,000. That's all. What is $4,000?
Over what period of time?
Over a year period of time.
Okay. Well, listen, let me get some other callers here, Jay.
Great.
Appreciate you, brother.
Have a good one.
All right. Have a good weekend, man. Hang on in
you
there,
too.
Brother. Right on. Brother Ted, good afternoon.
Hey, Bubba Oshie. I was just listening to the wisdom that Jay was providing, and hopefully and turned off or disconnected. I'm interested in learning more and listening to him more, because the reasoning that he's providing is the kind of type of reason I think we all should hear more of. So I'm on the line. I'm multitasking as usual, but I'm listening too and learning.
I appreciate that, brother.
Thank you so very much for taking my call.
Always. All right. Thank you, Brother Ted. Yeah. Once again, tomorrow, Collard Green Festival has been postponed to a later date in October. And I really appreciate Mama Nabantu and the work that she provides. Also, too, the Pan-African Federalist Movement. We need to get them on the program again, and some others. Try to line up some guests for the October month. I know Baba Baruti will be coming on. I think that's October. It's a Monday. And Baba Baruti's going to be on with us. Yep. It's Monday, the 14th. October 14th. October 16th, of course, is the Day of Atonement. The Million Man March. Yeah. Beautiful day there. That was a beautiful day, believe me. Remember it like it was yesterday. And all the things that led up to it. But then again, just like that day and other times, we have a chance to do something. Yeah. Sometimes we miss the mark. We missed a golden opportunity. Because the bottom line is that unity is what is necessary. Unity is what is vital for us as African people. And I ain't talking about American Africans. I'm talking about African people, period. You know, when you consider the amount of Africans on the planet, and that's why, too, you know, Caucasians' numbers are dwindling. You know, they have been experiencing negative population growth for decades now. You know, the pandemic hit them pretty hard in Europe because their population was older and they had many preconditions, whatever they might be. Our population is growing, is younger. And what does Bill Gates want to do? Yeah, exactly. Population control. Not Caucasians, not Europeans, not Urugu. Population control of those others, and particularly us. It's just like Frances Cresswelsing, she said, I mean, I never forget this, at a presentation she did here with her and Mama Marimba Ani. And she said, I was in the kitchen, you know, she's been working with Brother Neely Fuller on the issues. And she said, I was in the kitchen and I realized that the Caucasian has an innate fear that we can birth him out of existence because of our dominance. Our genetics is dominant. We could birth him out of existence. And so therefore, he must control. They began to realize this when they got together and said, hey, listen, we may war amongst ourselves, and we do, because we're the most warring people on the planet. We're the most violent prone people in human history, and we can develop weaponries of mass destruction, but we have to control things because we're not in a majority. We create some majority. We created a majority here in this country, brought all these Africans here to help build it up, and then of course begin to restrict them and restrict the import of Africans.
killing off the indigenous people, promoting immigration, giving Caucasians land, stolen land, and y'all talking about immigration. These are some evil people, family. They're not the majority in South Africa, but yet they rule it still. Even though they fought, Nelson Mandela comes out of the prison. He is elected. Many Caucasians left. There's a documentary I saw. I wish I could remember the name of it. But basically it was a documentary where Caucasians just couldn't fathom being in South Africa now to be ruled by Africans, being ruled by the people whose land it is. So they left. They went back to, you know, the Dutch, you know, the Dutch were there. A lot of Dutch, a lot of British, you know, and they went back to Holland or the Netherlands, or they went back to other parts of Europe, you know, the Germans. But then they realize how they can manipulate and still maintain control. Because my contention is if you control the money and you control the weaponry, your ass is in control. I don't give a damn about the politics. I got the money and I got the weaponry. I have the ability to do nefarious things, clandestine things. I'm in control. And that's how it is in parts of Africa today. The French. Never forget when the French had that situation back about, 2016? Somebody came in on a theater and started blowing folks away and so forth. There was such worldwide sympathy for the French. Many of us start putting the French colors on your Facebook page, color thing. How sorry. Not understanding that the biggest colonizer still today, right now, is the French. To hell with the French. They still have, you know, many countries, you know, they kind of, okay, I'm out of here. I got what I wanted. I got all the stuff that I needed for free to build my country up. All those European countries had nothing. They had no resource. They had nothing. Belgium, because of the Congo, rich. All those other countries, all of them, the Netherlands, all of them, because of Africa. It's like the cracker said, we must not let them be a producer. We must not let them use their resources for the benefit of them. We must keep them poor. We must keep them begging, keep them in debt. If you didn't get the African World newspaper, the war report, if you didn't get it, I can get it to you. You can call my number, 414-324-5796, or you can email me, OSHI427, A as in Apple, D as in dog, E as in Edward, OSHI427ADE@gmail.com, and I can send you the link for the newsletter and what's all in it is deep. They even have a section there of who owes the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, who owes the World Bank. Almost all the African countries, anywhere from a few hundred million to over $1 billion. We don't owe them a damn thing. Not a penny for what they have done to us. So, hope you guys have a good weekend, that you're safe. The hurricane has moved on from us, and so the next few days should be decent. I don't know how much destruction. I listened to the news this morning. A lot of downed trees. Some areas lost power. It wasn't as destructive as, and that's good. That's good. And they envisioned. That's great. It wasn't. You know? So. We'll be back next Monday. Yeah, yeah. The last day of September. Yeah. Yeah, Monday, the 30th, the last day of September. And then, of course, October, and then things begin to change. Columbus Day, or more importantly, Indigenous Peoples Day. On the 14th, the day that Baba Baruti is going to be here. A couple of European Jewish observances, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Yeah. And of course, November, the end of daylight savings time, and of course, the fifth election day. In the last Thursday of the month is Thanksgiving, and then comes all the other stuff for the day of September into the so-called new year. Same old, same old. I tell you, I hope and pray that we wake up globally. Hope and pray that we have developed some leadership. That leadership develops a cadre of individuals, of men and women, who understand how important it is that we come together and we begin to plan and do for ourselves. We have the population, we have the intelligence, we have everything we need, but what exactly? Our right minds. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko, the most potent weapon. In the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources. Everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they shown hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. You have a blessed and wonderful week, and you be safe. Shem Hotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahorier means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Have a great and safe weekend. Peace, family.